Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
Welcome to the Measuring Success Right podcast. My name is Kat Harris. I'm a news media student at BYU, and today our guest is Karen Dillon. Karen Dillon is a longtime business writer and editor, the former editor of the Harvard Business Review, and she has co-authored three books with Clayton Christensen. She lives outside of Boston with her husband and two teenage daughters. Thank you for joining us today, Karen.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So one of the reasons why we invited Karen to be on our podcast, aside from her obvious success in both her books and as editor of the Harvard Business Review, we recently attended a forum at BYU?
It was a TEDx conference,
right,
at BYU, yes.
So we got to meet Karen at a TEDx conference at BYU. She spoke to our team beforehand, and we got to learn a little bit more about her life and how she personally measures success. So Karen, why don't you tell us how you personally measure success?
Sure. So I've lived enough years to have thought about this for a long time, and everyone's definition will be different. But for mine, it is really being the person I want to be. And I know that sounds trite, but I think about that every day. You know, when you have an inclination to treat somebody rudely in a grocery store or cut someone off in a parking lot or help someone or not help someone, you know, just reminding myself, be the person I want to be. And I want to be a person who does those things nicely and kindly and well. So sort of making that something I hear in my head, being the person I want to be every day and reminding myself of that every day, and ultimately, personally, the person I want to be is a good wife, a good mother, a good daughter, a good sister, and a good friend. And if I keep all of those things in mind, everything else is gravy. But being that person is what would really make me feel like I have been successful.
And I love that definition, especially because it has to do with a lot of the minor details of everyday life that I think we don't think about as often. A lot of times, you know, when people ask us, what have we done with our lives, it's the bigger things that come into mind. But when you really measure what you've done by those everyday acts of kindness, I think you get a more comprehensive view of who someone really is. So I'm wondering, have you always had the same definition of success, or has it changed over time for you?
Oh, definitely changed over time. I was, like many people, ambitious, had career goals. I wanted my success to be measured in my profession in bylines, you know, published in magazines and newspapers, and being known for my work and interviewing famous people and writing things. So I certainly had a different version of it, which was very career focused for a very long time. And as I got older and I became a mom, and I recognized the preciousness of the relationships in my life, in all of our lives, that really shifted away from those things, which are nice, not bad at all, wonderful, but they're not the most important goals to me anymore. And I've shifted that slowly but surely over time, and no regrets that I have.
So at TEDx, we heard a little bit more about, I guess, your life decisions that you'd made and how your career kind of built where you were. Did you notice that after you started to prioritize your family over your career that you saw less career success, or did it change at all?
You know what? It sounds too good to be true, but I mm-hmm. feel like I've been even happier with my career since then. I think once I stopped, you know, putting my foot on the gas pedal of my career constantly all the time, and you know, you almost burn yourself out with the sort of desire to be great at what you do at work. And I started making choices about only doing work that really I found inspiring or fulfilling, or collaborating with people that were exciting to me and I could learn and grow from those. All of those experiences over time just made me feel like I've had a much more exciting past 10 years than the years before. And it's because I was very careful to work when it had meaning for me, as opposed to just work when it might have had more meaning for someone outside. Someone watching my career than it having it had personal meaning for me has been really successful. And since I focused on my family more, I've had the really wonderful things happen of becoming a co-author with Clayton Christensen three times.
Right.
We made the New York Times bestseller list. We made the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. I've had the opportunity to speak in some wonderful places around the world and meet so many people. None of those things would have happened if I hadn't done the shift in my career to focus more on my family. And I say really quickly that I didn't do those things at the exclusion of my family. I only chose to work when I could fit it in around the priority being my family, and that worked out really well for me.
That's amazing. I'm wondering, That must have been difficult, or maybe it wasn't, but I'd love to hear your experience. I think especially because a lot of our audience are BYU Marriott students or alumni who maybe they're working on entrepreneurship or they're working on a startup, and that sometimes when you're bootstrapping it, it's long nights, you know, maybe away from your family, and you just want to succeed probably for your family. And I'm just wondering, what was that like for you to make that decision to kind of stop pumping the gas so hard and to just focus on other things?
It was a long decision. I didn't do it quickly, and I didn't do it alone. I made it with my husband and discussed it for almost a year. Could we financially afford to do it? That's a really important thing. I know you can't probably in your 20s
right.
afford to walk away and change the way I could. So we were very lucky that I think we had lived really carefully. And so we did have a nest egg a little bit, and we downsized our life. And there was a lot that went into that decision. It was probably easier to do in my 40s than it might be in your 20s. And I get that. You can't sort of choose to do this, completely random of the context of your life. But I think you have to be very careful to not kind of constantly get sucked up into those things, startups, the entrepreneurial ventures. Those are all important, and they're important to you. But if that becomes all of your life, all of the time, for an extended period of time, then I think it's very hard to get off of that track. I think that's the trap, is to not let it sort of suck you up away, and then you're disconnected from the other things that you once said were important to you.
Yeah, I remember at TEDx, you mentioned how supportive your husband has been of your career, even to the point of putting his own on hold. Am I correct?
Yes, he did. Yep, he did. When we ultimately, we made a decision that he would be stay home with the children so that I could really focus on my career. And I was incredibly grateful. He had a career as an investment banking and chose to do that. And we were able to have one parent home all the time with the kids, which was really important to us both.
That's amazing. So have you and your husband always been on the same page as far as how you balance work and family, or did it take some negotiation?
It took conversation, I think. I don't think we fell into our patterns, and I don't think we ever stopped to think about it for a long time. And in fact, I can tell you the first big fork in the road we had, which was a mutual one, is we had met when I was working in London. He's British, and he was working there. And then we came back to New York, where I was working, and he got a job in New York. And we found ourselves as young professionals making a lot of money, frequently seeing each other at the end of the day, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and eating dinner on our laps in front of the television and not really having a conversation. And after a while, you start to realize, what are we doing this all for? Like, we barely see each other. We didn't have children at all at that point. It was just a fork in the road there. We're like, this is not the life we want to build together. So we chose to leave New York and take lesser jobs, although I ended up loving the job I took, to move to Boston to be closer to where my family was. So that was the first time I think we did have that conversation, and it was a mutual decision at that point. So I guess that was probably a clue we were on the same page, but it took us a little while to recognize the pattern we were falling into without having had a conversation about it.
Well, that's amazing. I'm just wondering, why was it so important to you and your husband to have one parent at home while you were raising your girls?
I had that in my growing up, and it just, to me, was personally powerful and important. It's not that I didn't want my children to have, they went to school, and they had some, you know, they had experiences, social experiences outside of the home, but it was just, I guess for us, it was hard to replicate what you could get from having one parent with a child most of the time, you know, the love, the care, the bonding, you know, all of those magical things. So there's lots of wonderful daycare options that aren't that, and so I'm not putting that down. But for me, probably because I think my mom is so fabulous, it was just wonderful to be able to replicate our version of that when we had the opportunity to do that.
Absolutely. So I love how you talked about kind of the difference between like burnout and balancing your family. Do you think that balance is always conducive to happiness?
That's an interesting question. No, because I think everybody needs to feel personally fulfilled. So yes, balance. If you're fulfilled if the parts of your life are fulfilled, it's very possible to have too much of anything, right? Too much.
Right.
I remember this as a young mom. Too much time with your children and no adult conversation is hard for anyone. Too much time, you know, in the four walls of your home and never getting air outside is hard for anyone. So balance in all things. But you need to be fulfilled personally, too, and that can take lots of forms. It can be, you know, stimulation of adult relationships in your life. It can be creative pursuits. It can be just change of scenery sometimes. So when you have fulfillment in the different parts of your balance, I think that's good. I think balance without fulfillment in any of them doesn't necessarily lead to happiness. It just probably means you're not unhappy. It's not the same thing as being happy.
That's really cool. So do you think that you've had that, I guess, like fulfillment in balancing your life since you decided to step away more than you did before so?
Absolutely, because I try to be very present in, I guess this is the thing, I'm just so conscious of things now. I try to be very present in my life wherever I am at that moment. I try to look my children in the eye when they're telling me things and when I'm asking about their day and make sure we all put our phones down. And the being present makes me happy because I'm connecting and I just know my children really well now, and that makes me really happy. And when I'm working, I also like them to see that I'm doing something that I love. It's okay and important that mom likes to do something too, and I think they're proud of me, and I think that has given me fulfillment too. So the consciousness of how I spend my time being deliberate and being something I'm choosing to do most of the time. We all have obligations in life, but most of the time has I think, been really fulfilling.
So I'm wondering, after you've had such an amazing career and you get to be a mom and do these amazing things, I guess, did you have certain specific female role models that you were growing up that you kind of wanted to emulate, or did you just kind of build your own life the way you wanted it to be?
I grew up in a more traditional home, so my mom was a role model as a mother for sure, and both of my parents always made me feel like I could do anything I set my mind to. I think my parents were a little ahead of their time. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in that I don't think they reinforced any notions of I couldn't do things because I was a girl or a woman, so
right. They
celebrated my career and my success, you know, at the right time, and they equally celebrated my, my being very involved as a mom. But I didn't have too many female role models. I had some wonderful male role models, and that was great and fine, actually. I had some people I really admired, starting with teachers who believed in me and saw opportunity in me, and then all the way through my career, I've always had somebody in my professional life that I just admired and gave me opportunities and I learned from. By and large, they tended to be men, actually, rather than women. But that was okay. They sort of saw me as a professional and a person with potential, and it worked out really well.
Right. So what do you hope your daughters learn from your life?
I think the most important thing is I think they need to find something that they're passionate about. I think, and that can be personal or professional. It just is not sort of bobbing along through life, not caring about things, finding something that they care about, and then making deliberate choices how that life works together. Don't just sort of let life push you in a direction that doesn't make you happy. I think it's pretty important to do that. And I really think there's nothing that compares to family and friends for the long haul. I think that's the only thing we can really count on in life, and it's wonderful, and it has so much meaning. And in my life, having a partner, you know, my husband has been wonderful, and knowing that I have my posse, my people to come home to, and my extended family, I hope they continue to value that. I have two daughters, and I've said to them many times, your relationship with each other will probably be the longest one of each of your lives. So it's really important that you love and respect each other, because you're all you've got right now for a really, really long time, to know that that's the future. And I hope they continue to nurture that relationship.
That's a wonderful idea. So I'm wondering, I guess, how fulfilling is career success for you individually? Because I imagine it must feel amazing to be so successful and to see your books at the top, you know, and on bestsellers lists, and to have that job as editor of the Harvard Business Review. But I've heard you talk about success in other terms. So I guess the question is, how fulfilling is career success for you in regard to, you know, when you compare it to other parts of your life?
You know, it's interesting because I think it is fulfilling, and I'm grateful and glad to have had it. There's no question, and it's probably more fun that I've had that success than not. But having had it, it makes it less important now. So I mean, I sort of mentally say, I've been to the mountaintop, you know, and it's fun, but I'm okay now being supporting other people or being invisible in a project or process or doing work just because it's fun or just because it's interesting. It's not going to make a bestseller list, or it's not going to do whatever. Supporting someone else in their ascent. There's something nice about having it and had it, and it's in my back pocket. It makes everything else so much more fun now, because those stakes don't matter as much. I do work for the joy of it.
So would you encourage people to try and have, you know, try and do that, try and help other people and to work because you like it, maybe before they have that success or even as they have that success? Or do you think it has to be kind of after you've already had your main career?
I think I genuinely believe that it's in a great way a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think if you do things that you love and you connect with people who you just learn from and respect and admire and want to help, and you pick projects and to use your energy and your time in ways that may not get you classic success, but feel good and make you feel fulfilled and feel happy, I think that tends to lead to success. I really do. I just think you become a person who has sort of joy in your work, and you are successful in it because you care about it. I think it's a very virtuous cycle, and I think that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned earlier that it might be more difficult in your 20s to step back from your career, you know, especially if you're supporting a family, than maybe later in your life. Are there times in your life where you need to kind of change strategy, where it's okay to put more into your business, and times where it's okay to step back? What's your opinion on that?
I think you have to. I think that's life. And that's, you know, when I talk about this generally, it's a business strategy. It's a business truism that companies cannot have one strategy from the beginning and stick straightforwardly to it all the way till, you know, success. They have to be open to what we call emergent opportunities, things you didn't expect that come your way, and there you saw it and you were ready for it and you could change course and do that. And then sometimes they have to focus and do what we call deliberate strategies. That's what makes a business successful, the kind of yin and the yang of that. And I think that's true in our lives too. It's not, you know, it's not possible to have one strategy completely heads down and be happy and find balance and maybe find the perfect thing. I think you have to be open. It's a dance. But it's important to recognize that it may not be what you think it is now, and it might come in a different form, and that's okay. Just being open-minded to that happening, opportunity happening. And yes, people have to earn a living or support a family or do whatever, but where you do have discretionary choices, or where you do get to make a choice about accepting a new job or not accepting a new job, then you factor in the whole of how that affects your whole life. You know, how are you motivated by that? Will you be made happy by that? Will it allow you some balance in your life? All those things when you do get to the point of getting to make a choice.
So they always say, you know, like hindsight's 20/20. But are there specific signs that you maybe have seen in your life or that other people can identify when maybe it is time for a strategy change?
I can tell you, a thing that affected me was that a close friend of mine from college died of cancer in his 40s. And
sorry.
He was just this big, yes, me too. He was this big, larger-than-life character, and I loved him so much. And I really hadn't been in touch with him as much in the final years. And I remember he did call me to tell me he had cancer, and I didn't get out to see him. And I missed what turned out to be the last phone call from him. And it was just like, how did I get tuned off enough that someone who was very important to me, I didn't connect with them closely in those final months of his life, and that bothered me. And it was just a reminder that life is precious and short. And how had I let our relationship slide a little bit? So then when maybe it was the most important for him to know how much I cared about him, that I was the least available to him. That was a sign for me that I had sort of gotten off kilter a little bit, is somehow that didn't become top of my priority list and it should have been.
Yeah, I think those kinds of experiences in our life give us a lot of perspective. I think you've given us a lot to think about as far as how we measure our own lives and our own success. I'm wondering, in your life, I guess, you know, and you're by no means like near the end of your career, but up until now, how do you feel, like, what is the thing you're most proud of in your career so far?
Oh, interesting question. I think I'm proud of the fact that I had the courage to try things and do things that I might not have, including moving to New York, because I was a girl from the suburbs of Boston. I had gone to sort of a nice, you know, quiet school in upstate New York, and I knew that for the publishing industry, that which I wanted to seek my career in those days, you had to go to New York. And in those days, there wasn't even such a thing as the internet or whatever to find. I had no roommates or jobs or where to live. So getting there, finding a good friend who I could move in with, that was a scary thing for me. I literally took the train down from Boston to New York with a suitcase and moved to New York. That was leap number one. I dared to do something that was probably, you know, many people I went to high school with would not have. And then just being open to learning constantly. Like, you don't stop learning when you graduate from college. There's just so much to learn about my career, about the world, about life, meeting new people. I think I loved that, and I'm proud of having done that, because I think I'm a different and better person for being open to learning things my entire life.
Yeah. Did you ever struggle with having maybe too many things you were excited about and too many things you wanted to learn about?
Sure. I think what suffered in those times was my personal life, because I put it all my energy into the career, and I in those early days would go into my office a lot on weekends to work, and I would never make weekend plans until I knew for sure that I didn't have to work and it was voluntary. And so I was excited about that, and it was opportunity for me, and the better I was at that, the more likely I'd get more opportunities. But I think the struggle was that I really tamped down building my personal life in those days, and that's where the suffer was.
Oh, interesting. I just have heard that, and you know, from a lot of different people at the Marriott School recently, that they've got, you know, too many directions they want to go and maybe more than one passion that they want to follow. And I think that can contribute to maybe, I guess, some kind of feeling a little bit lost, like, where am I going to go with my future? When people are struggling with that, what would be, I guess, your advice?
I think there's great advice that Clay gives people, I'll pass it on, is it's a business tool. It's called, boringly called, discovery-driven planning. But it's really good way to remind yourself why you're making the choices that you're making. So if you have a lot of passions, maybe pick one or two that you're going to pursue, if you can, sort of guide yourself a little bit. But write down your assumptions about why you're doing what you're doing. I assume that by spending my weekends working on the startup, in a year I will have more opportunities. Or I assume that by working on the startup, I'm going to meet a new group of people and it'll be interesting. Whatever they are, literally write down your assumptions. And then constantly go back and check yourself on that. Am I getting out of this experience or this excitement or this enthusiasm the thing that I thought I was going to? Because sometimes you can get far down the line and you forget why you were doing it in the first place, and it's not giving you, you've made a choice to do something probably at the exclusion of something else. It's not getting you where you want to go, and you might forget that. So it's a really good tool just to kind of remind yourself why you're doing what you're doing and use it as a check-in all the time, because that's a good time to change your strategy if it's not working out the way you thought it was. But it's okay. Life is long. You might, in one decade, follow one set of passions, and in the next decade, follow another set of passions, and that's okay too.
I think that's wonderful advice. Has been a great conversation. I'm grateful for you being willing to be featured.
I'm grateful for your questions, and I wouldn't mind having, you know, some time travel and being your age and thinking about all these things again. I'm sure I would do things better and differently, but it's also wonderful to have known that you can make mistakes along the way and still course correct and get it right in the long run. I think that's an important lesson for anyone to know.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Karen. We really appreciate it. Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I will just pass on to you, having been for the first time only at the BYU community a few months ago. What a paradise you have there, and what wonderful, inspiring teachers and students. What a take advantage of the opportunity you have now, because you're surrounded by some really cool things, and life doesn't always provide you with so many wonderful opportunities right in that space. So enjoy your time there as well.
This has been Measuring Success Right, a project of the Marriott Student Review of Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under Marriott Student Review. Thanks for listening.
Hi, my name is Hunter Muse, and I'm a co-host on the show Measuring Success Right. Be sure to tune in next week to hear my conversation with Bianca Lisenby, co-founder of 4Life, an innovative leader in health support products. You'll hear about her journey in building a global company with her husband, how to integrate your faith with your work, and how to manage mental health. Join us next week.